Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on this Monday afternoon. The stage is set. Foxborough, Saturday night. Wild card round. Titans and Patriots. 7:15 kickoff. Our time. And to help us with the opponent, Mike Petralia, who covers the Patriots in Boston for CLNS Media. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to close out the noise around me with all the panic going on in the streets of Boston and throughout New England.
Okay, in all seriousness, I want to know how serious you are with that statement, because I need you to hold your laughter, because we've been talking the first 3 hours about how, and it sounds weird to keep saying it out loud, but if we were to pick the best opponent in the AFC to kick this thing off for the playoffs for the Titans, it's actually the Patriots. It would be a better matchup than the Chiefs.
Oh, no question. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Anybody who's watched the Chiefs the last 4 weeks, 5 weeks of the season versus the Patriots the last 4 weeks of the season can see that. The Patriots look old and slow on offense and on defense. What I was shocked by yesterday is that Ryan Fitzpatrick engineered a 13-play, 75-yard drive in 3.5 minutes against a defense that for a better part of the year was considered the deepest, most versatile in the National Football League, and they marched right down the field with a first-round bye on the line. And they just, it was amazing that knowing that the Dolphins needed a touchdown, needed to get into the end zone because the Patriots had a 4-point lead, the Patriots just seemed very soft on defense and looked disorganized. And it was, that to me was the most stunning part of yesterday. Tom Brady looking the way he did in the first half. He's kind of been going down that path for quite some time in this 2019 season. But the way the defense fell apart to me was shocking.
Is it father time with Tom Brady? Is it the loss of a guy like Gronk? The Patriots have done it better than anybody, Mike. Everybody knows that, of replacing guys. Just when you think you can't replace somebody, they always find a way and they don't miss a beat. But it's pretty clear you don't replace a guy like Gronk, because you can't guard him. If you want to go to Gronk, he's going to, you know, he's either going to keep a play or a drive alive, or he's going to be in the end zone because he's unguardable. What is it? Is it the loss of him? Is it father time? Why have they struggled mightily on offense?
Well, I would tell you Rob Gronkowski's departure and James Devlin's injury were two of the things that the Patriots spent a good portion of the season trying to make up for on the offensive side of the ball. They just looked like on third down they had no one to go to if somebody doubles Julian Edelman like the Dolphins did yesterday. And a lot of teams have doubled Julian Edelman, taking him right out of the game plan, and Brady really hasn't had a consistent number two, number three option to go to. What's also very surprising to me is the lack of presence of James White in the offense. If James White doesn't appear this Saturday, I'll be shocked, because the Patriots, I think, you know, from people I've spoken to, have really been trying to pace him and watch his snap count heading into the latter part of the season, because the last couple of years he's tended to wear down a little bit, or the coaching staff believes he's been wearing down a little bit towards the end of the season. So they wanted to keep James White fresh. Well, obviously Saturday there's no sense in preserving him. They've got to use every weapon available. And I would figure if Mike Vrabel double teams Julian Edelman, which, you know, I would expect him to do based on the success rate of those teams that have done that, then I would expect James White to have a big role on Saturday night. Huge.
Let's hit on the other thing, Mike, that's been discussed sort of subtly, but it's hard to get specifics, I guess, and that's Tom Brady's arm. His passing numbers have deteriorated a little bit, as the team's record has, and there was people throwing around stats yesterday about the number of passes that traveled 20 yards in the air and things like that. Is his arm bothering him?
I don't think it's bothering him to the point where it's affecting his effectiveness. I mean, the pass he threw to Philip Dorsett down the field was a beauty, and he's been able to throw the deep ball occasionally, but he just hasn't had receivers to get downfield, and he hasn't felt a trust factor with these receivers to throw the deep ball, and I think that's one reason we haven't seen him throw deep. I do think there's something physically off with Tom, whether it's his elbow, or which he insists it's not, or whether it's something in his lower body. When I see the overthrows that we saw in the first half yesterday against Miami, it makes me think that he's not playing with the healthiest of bases, meaning he's not getting his footwork right, his legs don't feel right. Something is amiss in his mechanics, and obviously you never see that from Tom Brady.
You mentioned it. It was a little shocking to see the Dolphins drive the field and get the game-winning score in Foxborough in the situation they were in, although the Dolphins have been better here in the last month, month and a half. But what is the issue in your mind with defense? Is it personnel? Or are there some injury issues there? Why has that production dropped off a little bit from what was considered the number one defense in the league?
I think they've become too soft and too passive. And they've played a lot of zone yesterday, especially in the first half and in parts of the third quarter that you just don't see the Patriots do. Have been in attack mode most of the season. And I don't know if they feel like they have fallen back into the habit of, we don't want to give up the big play, we want to keep everything in front of us. Well, that's all well and good. But if a team has any type of tight end or short passing game, and I'm sure Mike Vrabel is studying this and knows Tom Brady as well as anybody, if Titans can throw short and keep their short passing game accurate, I think there's big chunks of yardage to be made over the middle, and that's what we saw yesterday. Especially in the second half and on that last drive, the Patriots were giving up, 15-yard chunks over the middle. Devontae Parker did have a great game, and he made a couple of catches where Stephon Gilmore was in on coverage as tight as he could be and just made a high point catch on the ball.
We're talking to Mike Petralia covering the Patriots as the Titans and Patriots meet this weekend. I know you asked a couple questions to offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels about the report surfacing of him possibly being pursued as a head coach, and he, of course, gave you the answer you'd expect, that he's worried about the Titans. But do you expect him to finally leave and be a head coach again this season? We've seen it come, be so close so many times. I mean, he basically was going to take the Colts job and then changed his mind. Do you think it finally happens?
I do. I think this is the opportunity Josh McDaniels has been waiting for. It is his hometown. You have Baker Mayfield in place there. You have OBJ under contract with, the Browns. And you have, a wealth of a Nick Chubb. You have a wealth of offensive weapons in place there. I just think the situation seems ripe for McDaniels to leave New England. He's done what he could possibly do and everything he could possibly dream of with Tom Brady, a very close friend of his. I think this is the opportunity McDaniels takes and will eventually move on there.
Now back to this game, and I know that defensively the Patriots have had a pretty good year, but when you look at the Titans and the offense, especially now that Ryan Tannehill is the quarterback, you have a 1,000-yard receiver in A.J. Brown, the rookie. You have a 1,500-yard running back in Derrick Henry. What do you see that the Patriots are going to have to do defensively?
I think they're going to have to throw some schemes. I think they're going to have to scheme up the Titans and fool Ryan Tannehill. That's kind of been the Belichick MO over the years, is to throw something at a quarterback that he hasn't seen on film and hope that Ryan Tannehill gets confused by it. You may also see Belichick and Brett Bielema, the defensive line coach, and Gerard Mayo, the linebackers coach, who also serves as a defensive signal caller, throw an amoeba defense at them where they have four or five or six guys lined up at the line of scrimmage, but not with their hands on the ground, and then try to confuse Ryan Tannehill that way. That's what I think you're going to see from the Patriots. It's not so much about taking away the weapons as much as it is, I think, in this particular game, as it is confusing the quarterback, and that's where I think their focus will be.
Mike, I know the teams have obviously changed since last season, but is there anything that can be taken away from the matchup last year? Also the familiarity that Dean Pease and Mike Vrabel and John Robinson have with the Patriots overall?
I think the Titans are going to try to do what they did last year and run Derrick Henry. I mean, if Derrick Henry isn't the number one weapon that Bill Belichick tries to take away, and we all know that's one of his MOs, I don't know who else on offense they would be keying in on. I mean, I know I just mentioned that they would try to confuse Ryan Tannehill, but that was specifically in the passing game. In the run game, they've got to obviously do a much better job than they did last year when they get literally run over by the Titans in their running attack. And that is one of the things Belichick mentioned first in his conference call with us this morning, is that the Titans have one of the best running attacks in the National Football League, with all due respect to the Baltimore Ravens. And the Patriots are going to have to find a way on their home turf to shut them down. And I think that starts with Lawrence Guy and Adam Butler along the defensive line.
This time next week, we are going to be talking about a Titans-Ravens matchup or a Patriots-Ravens matchup.
You won't be talking about a Patriots-Ravens matchup.
It'll you're right.
Patriots.
Yeah, it would be the Patriots and the Chiefs.
Patriots-Chiefs, right. Titans-Ravens. Just based on what I saw yesterday, I think the Titans are playing the kind of football you want to be playing going into the playoffs, and I know things can turn on a coin and flip. You know, the great teams can flip a switch, but based on what I saw yesterday, that is a huge red flag that the Patriots weren't able to close the deal against an inferior Dolphins team, playing hard, mind you, but still an inferior team at Gillette Stadium. And I think that the Titans and Vrabel certainly have a wealth of knowledge, systemic knowledge of the Patriots, and I think that's going to be one of the big telling factors and a big difference maker on Saturday night.
It's been a decade since the Patriots have been in this spot in the playoffs. We'll see how it all plays out. Mike, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. That's Mike Petralia, CLNS Media, there in Boston covering the Patriots. We will come back with more on the other side of Darren, Donick, and Chase, but first I want to talk to you about a place I'm very excited to discuss. You're going to hear me in the 2020 calendar year, especially talking to you about USS, United Structural Systems. It's a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area, Middle Tennessee, since 1994, and they've got over 18,000 satisfied residential customers. Speaking of foundation repair, do you have bricks that are cracking in on your home? Do you have walls that are bowing, doors or windows that are sticking, drywall separating, chimney tilting or leaning? Look, all these are signs that you're probably going to need to get in touch with the folks that do this for a living, the pros, right? The ones that know how to fix this. And this can be a scary thing as a homeowner if you see any of these things happening. Your house may be trying to tell you something, right? Anytime you find walls bowing or cracks, something's going on in your home and you need to get with United Structural Systems. They can help you. Free estimates. They're locally owned. They're licensed and insured. If any of these signs are happening to you, they guarantee their best. Call USS. That number, 615-227-2275. That's 227-2275, or go check out everything you need to know about them on their website, usstn.com. Oh, boy, this has been a fast show.
Have you seen there was a meme or an Instagram post that was going around that a husband and wife, like the wife got a mom's night out with the girls, and so dad was with the kids, and dad like posted that he was playing this song over and over again, and the mom texts, how are things going? And he's like, things are good. Are you drinking? And she goes, yeah, having a few drinks, whiskey drink, vodka drink. And like the text chain keeps going on with lines from the song, and she's like, are we doing this? Are we really doing this right now?
Because it played on the jukebox at the bar she was at 20 times in a row.
Yeah,
and
that's
it. He was paying to have it played on, I guess, the app where you can control the music.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, and man. She goes, are you the one doing this? Because I guess everyone at the bar was like, what is going on?
That's funny.
Because they have those apps now where you can pay on the jukebox, and so that's what it is.
Yep. Good stuff. By the way, you can join us. Not us. Not this group. We'll be down in Dallas, but 102.5 The Game. We've got an official Winter Classic watch party. It'll be at Tin Roof on Broadway. That's New Year's Day, of course. You can cheer on the Predators as they suit up to take on the Stars at the Cotton Bowl. Puck drops at 1 o'clock. You can enter to win Predators tickets to an upcoming home game, plus other great prizes. Once again, that's at Tin Roof on Broadway. So if you're looking for a place to go hang with people who are not going to be in Dallas, there's your place.
We'll be ringside.
We'll be there. We will be there tomorrow at 2 o'clock. So the shows are swapping tomorrow. Jared and Floyd will be on from 10 to 2, our normal spot, and then we will be on from 2 to 6 there at the Cotton Bowl. So we're very excited about that. The teams will be skating. Supposedly, our booth, our radio booth, where you'll hear Pete Weber, Hal Gill. We've also got a little bit of a wrinkle. I think we're going to have a on-site rink reporter that you may recognize. You may know. We know.
Name Wiley,
of course, according to Randy and Bucksnort. So thank you, Wiley. I think Mr. Danuke is going to be our rink reporter.
Yeah.
So we're going to try something new on the radio broadcast.
Yeah, we'll.
I'll be an extra pair of eyes in a different vantage point, and that will be. And that's what we're going to have to scout out when we get down there, is exactly what the sight lines look like.
Yeah.
And then, because the original thought was, well, what if Pete and Hal are way up in the football press box, which has happened at times to the radio broadcasters.
Well,
at some of the Winter Classics,
I'm told usually that the visiting team is always in the press box.
Yeah,
and so this we got lucky that we have a ringside position, which is where we're going to do the show tomorrow. And I have been told by somebody to watch out for pucks coming in our direction. So we'll have to keep our head on a swivel during practice.
It was good to know.
We learned this from Crispy long ago. Always keep your head on a swivel.
Always.
Yes. So,
but this will be fun. The weather looks a little more promising than it did last week.
Yeah,
the forecast is improving.
The rain odds are going down, 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 which are good. That's good. That's the weather, like temperature-wise, that really doesn't. That's not really a factor. It's still going to be in, I think, the lower 50s. But it's all about the rain.
It says a high of 50. I'm just looking at my phone right now. What it says, a high of 50 and cloudy, which, as Hal Gill said, cloudy is key because you don't want the glare.
You don't want the sun
on the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's really about keeping the rain away. And right now, I think it's at, what, 10%? That's nothing.
I have 20.
Okay. That's still nothing.
It's better than it was last week.
It was up to the highest I saw it was 40.
Mm. Okay.
But now it's down to 20. So it's been cut in half. They're going to have to play better. They have not played well since coming back from the break. In 48-hour span, less than 48 hours, two games against Pittsburgh, just not good enough.
So frustrating because they had built up, I think, some good confidence and had some success in that 4-on-1 stretch. And then two games where it's a lapse within the game.
Yeah.
Late in the first period, in the first game at home, right? The two quick goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then right off the hop, terrible start in Pittsburgh.
If I'm being totally honest, that's probably what surprised me / disappointed me the most. You just in less than 24 hours after coming off a game at home, same opponent, turn around, go right to their place. I would have expected a better start. And I know the second and third periods were way better.
Oh, they played tremendous.
They played great. But the problem is you gave up three in the first and you played an awful first period, and that's what surprised me and disappointed me, because you would have expected just the opposite, for them to come out with their hair on fire in the first period in Pittsburgh.
It's so weird too, because we're with both of these games, we're talking about something that we don't talk about a lot with this team, and that's goaltending. And you know, I thought the goaltending both nights. Peck obviously getting pulled Friday night and UC Saturday. I mean, that was tough. It's something you don't see with this Predators team. And I know you can't put it all on them. It's a team thing, but that is the really weird part. That's the conversation. Willie, we talked about it last week with their save percentage, both of them being under 900.
Yeah, they're not bailing the team out of tough spots. They're not making key big saves.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just taking them for granted for so long. You know, that there's a lot of teams that have had this issue. The Predators, really, as a franchise, even going back before Pekka-Rinne and UC Saros, they've always had good goaltending. You know, and right now it's not where it can be. And as you said, there's other things too. It's just lapses. Two goals quick in a minute five. Two goals in 34 seconds the night before. In Ottawa, the two boom, boom goals. They go from up 1-0 feeling great to down 2-1. You can look at spots in the season where they've been plagued by little lapses in a game where they can also look good in the same game. Like you said, they were dominating the game late in the game. And then they had the bad call go against them, which was really a bitter pill
okay,
to swallow.
Okay, so you're there. I'm not. I'm sitting here watching it, listening to it. You're there. What? Obviously, Peter Laviolette was not happy. He kept pointing up at the Jumbotron. So what? Take me through what you guys were discussing on the TV side.
Well, the game is tied.
This is the Austin Watson play.
Yeah, there's going down towards about a minute and a half left in the game. Nashville is pushing. They've come from 4-1 down to tie the game. The mm-hmm. only offense that Pittsburgh had really in the game after the initial blitzkrieg was the power play. They weren't going to score. I'm convinced anyway. Now, overtime might have been a different story, the 3-on-3. But you really feel good about things. And then Austin Watson skates towards the top of the crease to try to get in front of the goalie to screen on a shot that's coming from the wing. Now, this is the way I saw it. And I understand that the game is so fast, right? As an official, it's quick. And if you didn't see it clear, you could miss it because it happened so fast. But it looks pretty clear on the replay to me. What happened is it's just like a guy trying to go in and block a punt, right? You can't run into the punter. You can't interfere with the goaltender. You can't run into him, especially when he's in his crease. But if you get blocked into the punter, I don't care if the punter goes flying. If that guy initiates the contact, that is either a no call or it's even interference on the defenseman. But Jack Johnson skates from the white ice back towards the crease, into Watson's path, and clips Watson prior to the contact. He spins him around, and Watson's leg catches Matt Murray's shoulder. The ref doesn't see it right away. I'm convinced. This is my theory, okay? I can't know what the ref is looking at. The crowd goes crazy. The ref looks over. Murray's down. Maybe out of the corner of his eye, he saw it, and he just raises the arm. He gives Pittsburgh the power play. I thought it was a bad call. Now, being fair, bad calls happen. Got to kill it off, right? Got to kill off the power play. Got to find a way to get it to overtime in a minute 20, and at least you get your point. And then Pittsburgh scores their third power play goal. This is another thing that has plagued the Predators, right? Patches of things. Like, over, you know, in most of the games, the penalty kill is not a problem. But they've had four or five games now, I think four is the number, where they've given up three or more power plays in the same game. And what's their record in those games?
0-4. L's.
0-4.
Yep.
So it's just the...
Find me another team in the league that's given up... I mean, you're just not going to win at this level if you give up three or more power play goals.
It's not easy to win. Even when you can score...
Those always result in losses.
Even when you can score, right? This Predator team can score. That was maybe the best thing you could say coming out of that game is Matt Duchene all of a sudden, for the first time in a while, looked like a force.
Mm-hmm. He looked good.
He looked like a force. They desperately need that.
The line looked
really
good.
Mikhail Granlund scores too. Maybe mm-hmm. that's the start of something for him. Craig Smith is playing well. The offense is coming at you in waves. That's what hopefully will help this team win. But they've got to get the goals against down.
The defense
right?
has got to be better.
They're giving up too many
goals. Too many bodies in front.
It's the goalies, but it's the goalies and the defense, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And it's also yep. not having the laps where you just have the big breakdown where you give up a wide open shot right in front of the net.
Yep.
You cannot give that up. They gave up in the first game against Pittsburgh, 4 of the 5 goals were right in front.
Right in
either
front.
On a rebound or a guy mm-hmm. gets loose in the slot where you have the guy, you have coverage nearby. Got to find a way to tie
goal,
up the stick.
They had three. I mean, there's three predators around him.
How does he score?
How does he score?
Granlund, Yossi, Ellis.
You can't
those
do
are the
that.
Guys I
like
want
you
there.
Can't, like he can. I don't care who it is. I don't care the opponent. You cannot give up a goal on yeah. a play like that.
Well, and then, as you mentioned, now, I'm not making excuses. It was a long ride to Pittsburgh. There was fog. There was a delayed takeoff. We circled for about 90 minutes. We got there at 4 a.m. We almost had to land in Akron, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. And maybe that had to do with the slow start. I don't know. Pittsburgh did not have the same delay getting back to Pittsburgh. But Matthias Ekholm, another great defender, right? He's the guy that got beat on the second goal. His man's in the slot. Bing, bing. Pass from the behind the net right in front. Boom. Mm-hmm. 2-0. So it's just they've got to find a way to eliminate a couple of big mistakes per game. And a lot of times one mistake leads to another mistake, right? It's a little snowball, and all of a sudden you've given up 2 goals. But I really believe this team at their best level is as good as any team in the league. I feel like they're not taking a back seat to other teams talent-wise in most cases. They just have to put it all together. And there's still time.
The word I used this morning with Braden and Derek is commitment. Because I said exactly what you said. Look, the talent is not in question. Everybody knows they're talented enough to hang with anybody. Stack theirs up against anybody else. You're just fine in that department. It's just about commitment. There's just too much of, you know, these breakdowns that you're talking about. I mean, this league is hard. You can't take periods off. You can't not show up for the first period and give up 3 goals. Look, Ken, are you talented enough to come from behind sometimes? Sure. In Ottawa, you get down 4-1 in the third, and you come roaring back, and you tie it up, and you come away with at least a point. Okay, does that happen sometimes? Sure. Sometimes you may even win those games. But if you keep playing that game over a course of an 82-game season, no matter how talented you are, you're going to lose. You're going to get burned. You're right. You're playing with fire, and you're going to get burned, period. And so you can't have these lapses in play from behind. Doesn't matter how talented. So to me, the word is really about commitment. I mean, they're going to have to be more committed defensively.
I think they, for the most part, they work very hard. I think it's the execution of the system. And it's not. And I think it's also dealing with the adversity. If you have you give up a goal, you can't allow that to lead to another goal. I'd like to look back. I was thinking about this. There's been several games where they've given up 2 goals in a real short span, right? For a veteran team like they are, it's more than you would think, right, for a team like that. I think these are all the things that I see that can get that goals against down, right? Instead of, okay, give up a goal early, all right, shake it off. Don't let that lead to another one. But 2 games in a row against the Penguins, that was key, right? They gave up bing, bing, 2 in a row.
All right, we'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, CSPN 102.5 The Game.
We're back. Darren Donick and Chase, CSPN 102.5 The Game. Enjoying some Green Day. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick. As we are about to go catch a plane to Big D, to Dallas. Willie will join us tomorrow, I believe. But Darren, you and I are about to be wheels up here in a few hours.
We're going to embark on Big D. We're excited about that. Let's get into something we haven't touched about today, because this is what happens when a season ends, right? Unfortunately, coaches get shown the door. Families get moved.
Yep.
So let's start with all the rumors that are out there. So the Redskins, they fire president and general manager Bruce Allen. He's out.
Yep.
We know they had an opening at the coaching position. It looks like it is all set, other than, I guess, the ink drying. Ron Rivera is going to be the next coach of the Skins, right?
Yeah, there were reports out there that Rivera and his wife were on a plane headed to Virginia, and that within the next few hours he'll be officially announced as the head coach of the Washington Redskins. So that was the first firing in the season, and that looks to be the first opening that'll be filled. But I think that's interesting that he would choose the Redskins. I thought that he'd be in the mix for Dallas, which Dallas is not officially open yet, but
Dallas
probably
or
will
Cleveland
be.
To me seems so much more attractive.
But for
like
some
talent
reason,
wise.
And so now he's got a young quarterback that he's got to develop with the right staff. He's got an owner that everybody knows is a knucklehead. So
I mean, look, the Browns, the Redskins, and Cowboys all have their issues up top. I mean, they all have, it's kind of different stuff, but it's nothing's clean about it. But if I'm just looking at talent, I mean, Dallas and Cleveland to me are just far superior right now, just strictly talent on the field, than the Redskins. We'll see. But so it looks like, so let's just stay in that division. Still waiting word on Jason Garrett. He's going to meet, I guess, with Jerry Jones or the Joneses. I think everybody feels pretty confident. No, I think it's supposed to be today, isn't it?
Yeah, his contract is set to expire in mid-January.
I think we all feel like he's going to get shown the door, right? Like this is finally it.
Yep.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, so it looks like Jason Garrett probably will know his fate here soon, and his fate will probably be he's no longer going to be the Cowboys coach. Pat Shurmur shown the door in New York, although they have decided to keep Gettleman, the GM.
That's a little surprising.
I feel bad for him. You know, he was not put in a position to succeed at all.
Yeah.
I don't know what they really thought the coach for the next 2 years when they hired him, whoever it was going to be, was going to be able to do the way they're retooling things.
Yeah. But I feel bad for him, too, because I think he's a situation similar to Mike Mularkey, that all of his stops as a head coach they're going to end in ways that really weren't their fault. I think he got dealt a bad hand, but he's probably not going to get another shot at it. So, I mean, Cleveland was a bad situation.
Disaster.
This is a bad situation with injuries and, you know, a young quarterback and all that stuff. And then, you know, Mularkey, we all know his story as well. So that's kind of how I
kind of feel like you get, even if they're bad bites, you get two bites at the apple, and it's really hard to get a third.
Yeah.
Really
Mularkey
hard.
Got three.
Well, we'll be talking about the Winter Classic.
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
Remember the abrupt firing of the Stars coach? Mm-hmm. The guy that took over, Rick Bonus, was sort of in that, right? He's been an assistant coach forever. He's been a head coach twice, and both were in horrendous situations. Mm-hmm. The beginning of the Ottawa Senators, which is one of the worst of all time. You know, they didn't spend a lot of money to try to get veterans. They were going to build through the draft, and they didn't do a very good job the first few years of drafting, and so his record was awful. And then the second go-round was a similar deal where just took over a bad Arizona team. So all of a sudden, he gets a chance, and he's got a good team.
Yeah.
Right? So he's got to be thinking, now this is what I'm in a position to do well here. So that,
by the way, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto has done a really good job since taking over for Bobcat.
He has done a good job.
Bobcat?
Bobcat. The comedian?
Bobcat. Bobcat really wasn't a... Bobcat's funny, but I didn't think he was a very good hockey coach.
Bobcat.
He's done well. I don't know his exact record. I think it's like 14-6.
Yeah.
Something like that. But the Maple Leafs have looked a lot better. I haven't really charted the Sharks. Really changed.
The boogeyman, Bob Boogie.
But a lot of times, though, in the NHL, these changes, as we've seen, it works, the coaching change. But the other one is nobody believed this, right? I mean, nobody really believed the Browns that they were keeping Freddie Kitchens, right?
No.
I know they came out like, oh, no way. There's a really good chance he'll be back. What? No. Stop it. Freddie Kitchens is out.
Issues from the very first game.
Should have never been hired.
Against the Titans.
He should have never been hired.
He shouldn't have. You're right. And that's on Dorsey. That's on his doorstep.
And so now there's a report that the next head coach is going to have a say
in the general manager story to be out there.
If Dorsey keeps his job. Because I saw that they would like Josh McDaniels, and there was some opinion that You know, Josh McDaniels may want to bring his own front office with him. And so I'm like, okay, so you're going to have John Dorsey be a part of the process of interviewing the next head coach, and then the head coach may decide if he's out? That just shows you, that shows you the organization. The Browns, yeah. And you, I said I was going to say it on the air, so here we go. I actually think Jeff Fisher would be a good fit for the Cleveland Browns. I know you disagree with that.
Yeah,
but I think that, number one, all jokes aside, 7-9, 8-8 would be an improvement for that organization. But at the same time, he knows how to deal with personalities like a Baker Mayfield, and if, you know, Odell Beckham, I mean, he's dealt with it in his career.
Can he deal with bad ownership?
Yeah, he's dealt with that. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that it would be a good fit. I don't think they're going to look at him.
I've been surprised at how poor Haslam has been. I mean, he's been
through, what, six coaches?
It's been ridiculous.
Is that right?
I think 5-7. I think that's what it is, 5-7.
Yeah, unreal.
It's a joke. Wanted to draft Johnny Manziel. Jeez, give me a break.
But three of the four teams in the NFC East are going to be open once Dallas becomes official.
Yep.
So I think it'll be interesting to see if a college coach gets a look.
And Marone's shown the door as well. It was came out that when they were done, that he would no longer be the coach.
So
there'll be an opening in the division.
Yep.
All right, we'll come back, close out Monday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase. But first, Willie's got a word about the good folks at Lee Company.
Vanderbilt has a new offensive coordinator, by the way. We'll tell you about that on the other side.
Good tease.
Reported. We will tell you. Let me tell you about Lee Company.
For people who didn't know, they fired the coordinators over the weekend.
Yes. So looking for new leadership on that front. Leadership is what you can find at Lee Company. They do all kinds of great things to service your home. And one of the things is maintenance. You've got issues maybe with a fence or a door, windows, floors. General maintenance is something that they have expertise in. Lee Company can help you with that. All you have to do is call them at 615-567-1000. They've done fantastic things for our home with the basics. And I've told you about them a ton over the years. Your heating, your cooling, your plumbing, your electric, they help you with that. They give you the annual calls if you're part of their home maintenance plan. But it goes beyond that. They have general maintenance as well at home or at your business. So if that's something you're looking for, you can make an online appointment as well at leecompany.com. So either or, 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Inquire about Lee Company. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Our coverage on New Year's Day will start 9 o'clock in the morning, 9 to 11, special edition of Smashville Live. Then at 11, we'll have another special hour from 11 to noon. Noon will officially start our pregame show. But during the 11 o'clock hour, we are expected to be joined by NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman on site. So that should be fun. So you're going to get 4 hours of coverage.
Yep. Ryan and I will start
leading
at 9.
You up to pregame, or leading you up to puck drop at 1 o'clock. Smashville Live is, of course, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. By the way, a little tidbit before you pass out the Vanderbilt information. In 2015, on January 1st, on New Year's Day, Jameis Winston, Derrick Henry, and Michael Thomas all were playing in the college football playoff semifinals. 5 years later, coming up in 2 days, Jameis Winston led the league in passing. Derrick Henry led the league in rushing. Michael Thomas led the league in receiving yards.
Huh.
That's a fun little fact,
that
huh?
That's cool.
I believe Marcus Mariota was playing in that same playoff, was he not?
Yeah, but he will not be.
He was.
Does Jameis Winston, though, I mean, the
but
yards.
It would have been
yards,
weird. And then Marcus Mariota was benched. There you go. I mean, that's been a weird tidbit to throw in there at the end.
But are we really praising Winston? I mean,
easy Twitter.
Yards are great, but did he have a good year?
Yeah, he led the league in yards and led the league in interceptions.
Yeah. Yards don't mean much.
So Vanderbilt has hired an OC?
They have, according to Pete Thamel. He's reporting it on Twitter. Todd Fitch from Louisiana Tech. He's a veteran coach. He's been around for 30 years. but he has been an offensive coordinator at Boston College, East Carolina, South Florida, and Louisiana Tech. So he actually coached Chris Johnson, CJ2K, at East Carolina once upon a time. So we'll see.
Vanderbilt are looking for two coordinators because the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator were let go over the weekend. In case you didn't have that on your radar, that kind of slid under over the weekend.
A little bit.
Not surprised on the offensive side, slightly surprised on the defensive side, but we'll see.
That's going to do it for our coverage today from Nashville. Tomorrow we'll be in Dallas giving you coverage leading up to the Winter Classic. We will be down there Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday providing you coverage. Before and after Winter Classic. Have a great rest of your day. Tomorrow we'll be on 2 to 6 in the afternoon from the Cotton Bowl. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM is next.